Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the first few minutes, they're going to be the views of Chuck Patterson, who has actually put together a silver coin. He wanted to tell you a little bit about it. Chuck does help Radio Liberty, and so we wanted to give him an opportunity to talk to you a little bit about his unique idea. Hi, Chuck. How you doing? Oh, let's see. We got to push the buttons there. There we are. Chuck, are you there?
Yes, I am. Here I am.
All right, fine. Why don't you tell our listeners where you got the idea for the John 3:16 coin?
Well, I was thinking and studying, and I've been studying monetary history for years, and I know that paper currency, eventually all of it goes into nothing, but I know that real currency, real money is gold and silver. And I was walking through Walmart, and I saw a religious book where the man had written John 3:16 in the emblem of a cross. He had not put an outline on it, but it was John 3:16, the word. So I put the outline on it and had somebody mint it for me, and it was an idea I put together that I thought would be very appealing to people. On one side, you have the American Eagle, and it says 0.999 fine silver, 1 troy ounce. And, of course, on the back side, you have the idea of the actual John 3:16, which is probably the most noted verse from the New Testament. Even people that are not religious understand what John 3:16 stands for. And we made this because it's silver, the price is right, and we hope to produce and distribute many thousands across the country through the next few years.
All right, fine. Of course, it's a good time. Just before Christmas, there's this eagle on the other side. What
right.
About the website? Can people actually see this up on your
website?
Yeah,
if they go to our website, Doctor, they go to www.john, the number 316, just the letters, or number 316, john316coin, coin.com, and they can see the coin actually twisting. It's the exact same picture of the coin they would receive, with the same likeness and light flashing off and on. So it's mirrored finish, by the way, 9.99 or 0.999 silver, so you actually can see yourself in it.
All right, fine. Of course, that's John 36 www.john316coin.com. Is that right?
Correct.
All right, fine. And what's your telephone number?
Yeah, the telephone number is 1-877-316-COIN, 1-877-316-2646, which is the actual prefix for coin, COIN, 877-316-2646. They can call that toll-free number and put their order in anytime they want. If we're not here, we have a voicemail system that will take their call.
Well, actually, how long have you been actually putting these out?
Probably for the last 3 to 4 months. It took a while to get the dies made and to find the right mint to make them for me that I could work with on the right basis of cost and the other factors involved. But we have the dies, and they can produce them very fast once we get the order. We have a certain amount of them in stock all the time, but if we got too many orders, it would take... All of our orders, by the way, are shipped within 30 days. The ones we have in stock will ship faster, but it would take us probably 3 weeks from the day the order comes in to actually get them minted and get them in the hands of the person that bought them.
No.
We have a 100% guarantee. If they get them out there for some reason, because each one of them comes in a plastic acrylic holding case, and they don't like them or don't want them, send them back, and we refund their money. So they have no problem with guarantees on it.
All right, fine. Well, our guest has been Chuck Patterson, and we're talking about the John 3:16 coin. And of course, www.john316coin.com, john316coin.com, and once again, your telephone number, Chuck.
Yeah, it's 877-316-2646.
All right, fine, and so thanks very much for being with us. We'll talk to you later, and our guest has been Chuck Patterson, and we'll be back here in just a moment, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're going to have a guest calling in very shortly. She's going to be talking about finances, and so we'll be this hour talking about finances, and of course we'll welcome your calls. If you're out there, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, today I pulled down off the Internet a report that came out just 2 days ago from the Congressional Office that is checking to see what is happening to this $700 billion grant that the Congress gave to Henry Paulson to solve the problems of our society. And, of course, Henry Paulson went to Congress and went to the American people and said, I need $700 billion. I want to buy up all these mortgages. The reason we have a problem today is because housing prices, I said, they are falling, and they're falling because so many homes are being foreclosed on. If we could stop the foreclosures, keep people in their homes, why the prices of houses would certainly level off, and this whole spiral would stop. And so Congress initially refused the offer. They didn't think it was a good idea. They voted it down. And then, of course, they went to the Senate. The Senate passed the legislation with the help of both Barack Obama and John McCain. Then they went back to the House of Representatives. They added on $150 billion in bribes to the congressmen. And if they would simply switch their votes, why, they'd get all this money. Now, this is a bribe. I don't care what you call it. You may say it's legal. You may say it's politics. They bribed the congressman with $150 billion of our tax money. And, of course, the following Friday, why they 56 congressmen switched their votes. And, of course, they came up with the $700 billion, actually the $850 billion, but $150 billion. So that was simply earmarked gifts to congressmen for projects they wanted in their districts so they could get reelected. And Henry Paulson got his bony fingers on the $700 billion, and what did he do with it? He changed his mind. He said, oh, I'm not going to try to get the mortgages. I'm going to refund my friends. And, well, he didn't say my friends, but that's what he did. He refunded his friends in the Wall Street banks, and he gave them, lent them $125 billion. And then he's given, hundreds of billions of dollars to other people. A lot of it, they will not tell us where the money's going or where it's going because it's a top secret. They don't want the American people to know which banks are in trouble, which ones they're funding. And we're going to be back here in just a moment, here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and hopefully we're going to have a Suzanne Trimbath calling in. She's calling just about now. But, of course, if she doesn't, why, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, anyway, there is a congressional committee that has been set up, not necessarily made up of congressmen, but of financial experts, to come up with a report. And that report just came on, was just released 2 days ago. If you can't get it on the Internet, we'll be glad to provide it for you, although we'd have to ask for a donation to cover that, simply because it's rather extensive. But it simply goes into the fact of what's going on. It points out that one in every home mortgages in the entire United States is in default today. That there are 10 million Americans who are unemployed, in fact, it may be much more than that, and that simply in the month of November, last month, why there is something like 533,000, over half a million people suddenly became unemployed. Well, we've got Susan on the line here, so let's go to Susan. Hey, thank you so very much for calling in, Susan.
Yes, you're quite welcome, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you give our listeners just a little of your background? You've been reading and studying this issue of finances for some time. Do you have access to a regular hardline phone or just on a cell phone?
I'm sorry, I don't have the I don't have it with me. I don't have anything except the cell phone right now.
All right, you go right ahead then.
Would you like me to take off the headset? Do you think that would improve?
It probably would, yes. It's okay, better off just with a regular cell phone, and that'll give us the best quality altogether. But Susan has been studying and writing on this for some time. Are you there, Susan?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, fine. Why don't you tell us a little of your background?
Yeah, I guess I've always been in finance. I worked with the Prudential Insurance, and then I was at the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco. I worked for the Stock Exchange in San Francisco, and then I moved to New York and was with the Depository Trust Company. Depository Trust Company provides trade clearing and settlement services for pretty much all of the trades of stocks and bonds in the United States.
All right. Well, what is your take on what is going on financially? Have you ever seen anything like what's going on today before?
No, there's really hasn't been anything like it. I know people are trying to make comparisons to previous financial crises, but this one is really quite different. There were some weaknesses in the system itself, in the way that we process stock trades and bond trades.
All right.
And those had been there for quite some time, but had not really been exploited. And it seems that when you look at the data, you see this rapid, just massive increase in problems in the system starting in 2001 that just, actions were not taken at that time to make the corrections, so that it really just got a lot worse. So we're at the point we are now.
Well, what do you think is at the basis of the current problem?
There were financial innovations were created. So there were new types of financial instruments and new types of investment techniques that were developed primarily in the 1990s. I mean, they were developed in the late 80s and then expanded in the 90s. And it's just like with any scientific invention, it can be used for good or it can be used for evil. And some of these were, first of all, used, just sort of exploited. People exploited it. For example, as I mentioned to you, one of the first times I listened to you talk on the shortwave radio here, that the credit default swaps. Rather than...
No, credit default swaps. I mean, you're going to have to define those for our listeners.
Right. Credit default swap is just like a little insurance contract. You buy a little insurance on a loan or a bond, and if the bond issuer defaults, then the credit default swap pays you.
In other words, basically you're buying an insurance to make sure that the financial vehicle that you've invested in is going to pay off, that they're not going to run off with the money, that you're sure that if you're supposed to receive interest on it, you'll get the interest. And then, of course, when the item, whether it's a bond or whatever the financial vehicle is, when it comes to fruition, why, of course, you'll get your money back. I mean, certainly you don't want to invest in something that you're not going to get your money back. That would be foolish. And so there was simply a sophisticated means of getting an insurance policy. So what was wrong with a credit default swap? That sounds like a great means of insuring your investments.
And it is a great idea, and it's a great idea just like if you have a house, you should buy insurance on your house. And if something goes wrong, then you're able to get money so you can replace your house. And so it's the same idea here. The difference is that when I go to get insurance on my house, I can only get insurance for as much as my house is worth. So if I have a $100,000 house, I can only buy $100,000 worth of insurance. And the insurance company monitors that. And that's very important from a lot of different standpoints. In particular, if you think about in insurance, the insurance company doesn't have to keep the whole value of $100,000 in a safe someplace for my house, because the chances that my house and my neighbors and people in the other parts of the country would all have to claim their insurance at the same time is very small, so they keep some portion of it. But in any event, the insurance company is always careful never to issue more insurance to me than the value of my home. Well, with these credit default swaps, unfortunately what they've done is they have issued an unlimited amount of insurance against the assets.
In other words, there could be maybe 10 different policies, 10 different house insurance policies, if we were talking about house insurance. So you could actually have you or somebody else could even take out an insurance policy on your home. Your neighbor could take out a policy on your home. Is that how it works?
Yes, exactly. Or I could take out 10 insurance policies on my one house.
Right.
So then what happens? Well, there's going to be some temptation to let something happen to my house. I won't be careful. I won't take care of it. I won't be protective of it because it's actually worth 10 times as much to me if it is destroyed than it's worth to me as it is. You understand? So
right.
It's as if I had, if you had an asset, let's say you have a bond, and that bond is based on mortgages. Because this is a real life situation here, and this is so people have got mortgages on their homes, and those mortgages are put into a bond, and on that bond someone buys this insurance. Well, if that bond is for $1 million to cover 10 houses, right, and you're holding that bond, and if one of the homeowners gets in trouble and you help them work out their payment schedules so they can stay on track to make their payments. If that homeowner makes their payments, you will end up in the end getting the $1 million for the bond. But if you have $9 million worth of insurance on it, then there's no incentive for the mortgage holder to work with the homeowner because they can get $9 million if you go into foreclosure, but only $1 million if you actually pay your bond, pay your mortgage. And this is the way that this credit default swap has been abused.
And, of course, this is really one of the reasons that they were in so much trouble today. Whether they were credit default swaps, which were specifically for these collateralized debt obligations that these bonds were made up of homes, or whether they were simply derivatives, which, of course, ensure all sorts of financial transactions. But we're talking about unbelievable sums of money. One of them, of course, is the fact that it is estimated that they're between $500 trillion and $1 quadrillion of these derivatives out there. We don't know exactly how much there are, but let's assume there are only $500 trillion. Now, the entire world economy is only $50 trillion. So here you're talking about the derivative values that are out there. These insurance policies are worth 10 times the entire economy of the entire world. And, of course, when they start turning bad, this is going to create a disaster. Would that be a fair appraisal of it, Suzanne?
Well, I have to say that the numbers that you're using I have not heard. I'm only looking at the these derivatives in the U.S. And in the U.S., we're hearing figures of about $60 trillion.
Right.
So globally, I don't know what the number is.
No, but, those figures are fairly accurate from people a lot smarter than I am. Where would you get the figures? But I can give a number of quotes on, people like Bert Dorman, who puts out the Wellington newsletter, and several other sources, Bob Chapman, who puts out the International Forecaster. They're talking about these figures, $500 trillion or a quadrillion, figures that, but this is the whole world economy. This is not just the United States, but even $50 trillion in the United States is the value of the entire world economy. In other words, we are not the entire world economy. We might be 20% of it or so. So we're talking about a lot of money, aren't we?
Exactly. And we know for a fact that there are $60 trillion in credit default swaps that are in the warehouse, that have been registered with the warehouse, at the Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation in the United States. So that number we know, but that is only what was voluntarily registered. It's not certainly not the whole world. And the reality is that the quadrillion figure is not impossible. The reason being that there is no limit to how many credit default swaps will be written against any one asset.
And I really think this is really so important for people to understand that, let's say, $50 to $60 trillion is the figure Suzanne's using. Well, our entire gross domestic product here in the United States, the sum of all financial activities and labor and exchanges here in the United States is only about $14 trillion. So you're talking at least four times that just in the credit default swaps, and that's not the entire derivative market. That's just this one little part of it. We'll be right back in just a moment here with Suzanne. Okay, Suzanne, you go right ahead.
The way I think it's important to think about this is that
gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com.
All swaps are derivatives, but not all derivatives are credit default swaps. Under any circumstances, They were writing these things, and of course this was really a wonderful idea, an insurance policy on the bonds, and it supposedly was going to equalize risk so that nobody had to take too much risk, and you could buy these bonds without worrying at all. They were rated by Standard & Poor's or by Moody, one of the rating houses. They were AAA bonds, so you knew that they were good, and then on top of that you bought an insurance policy, and boy, you were really secure. And so banks all throughout the world, and specifically in Europe, were buying up these collateralized debt obligations. And those, of course, were bonds based upon bundling of more home mortgages. But many of them were subprime mortgages. They were actually mortgages lent to people who in no way in the world were they ever going to be able to pay off the money. They were actually issued under government threat on the banks that told the banks, if you don't write these bonds, probably mortgages for people who can't afford them, for poor people, we're going to fine you. You're going to just be so miserable. We want everybody to be able to buy a house, whether they can afford it or not. And so the legislation was passed back in 1977, but really enforced during the Clinton administration. That would have been that period between 1992 and the year 2000. And mortgage companies and banks were threatened and told they had to write these mortgages for people who couldn't afford them. And, of course, it worked really well. They could get them in with a teaser loan of 2%. And now that's 2%. You buy a house, you borrow, $200,000 at 2%. That's not too bad. But they were adjustable-rate mortgages, and they were going to have to be refinanced at the end of 3 to 5 years. And when you refinance those loans at 3 to 5 years, the interest rate went up to 5.5% or 6%, and there was no way that these poor people could afford them, and then they defaulted. But when they defaulted on their loans and lost, their homes were foreclosed on, why those bonds that had been created and sold all over the world suddenly were not performing. And this is where they've really got the problem, that and the fact that the people who wrote the insurance policies, the credit default swaps or derivatives, didn't have any money in the bank. How could that possibly have happened, Suzanne?
Well, it's, after all of those events that you just discussed, in 2002, President Bush had a stated policy of increasing home ownership among minorities by 5%. And so there were additional, throughout 2002 and 2003, there were additional programs put into place for grants for down payment and 110% mortgages, these sorts of things. What happens is you need to understand that it's very expensive to be a homeowner, and it's not just about the mortgage either, because if you go from being a renter to being a homeowner, there's just a lot of things that you need. As a renter, you don't need paintbrushes and plumbing tools and lawnmowers, and maybe the house is bigger than your apartment, so you need a lot of furniture. And a lot of people did, in fact, overextend themselves, regardless of the problems with the mortgage interest rates. Now, as far as this business about overseas, again, this is another financial innovation, what they call structured securities. And I've actually written a book called Beyond Junk Bonds. We have a whole chapter in that book just on structured securities that explains what these collateralized debt obligations, collateralized mortgage obligations, what these are and how they work. Basically, what they do is they take a pool of mortgages. And among those mortgages, the division is not just, the mortgages themselves aren't just put whole cloth into the bond. It's split up so that there's one part of the bond that is just the interest payments, and there's another part of the bond that is for the principal payments, and there's one piece of the bond that is the interest payments only from, zip codes in Southern California. So, and that's the way that they were able to get some of these subprime mortgages packaged into securities, structured securities, that would get AAA ratings. Because for every one of those structured securities that had one piece that was AAA rated, they had another piece that was, junk bond rating. And then what would happen is, in order to get the AAA rating, they would have to take all of the mortgages that defaulted, all of the mortgages that paid off early, et cetera, and put them into the tranche that got the junk bond rating, right? So that the AAA rating would be the first, you know, the first money to come in always went to that bond.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Suzanne. Suzanne, could you just briefly review what you just said?
Mm-hmm. We're talking about structured securities.
Structured securities, right.
Structured securities. So these are collateralized debt obligations, collateralized mortgage obligations. And the way that it's done is that a package of these loans or mortgages, whatever they are split up so that the revenue stream is separated from the principal payments, et cetera, and packaged up in such a way that one part can get a AAA rating and another part of the same set of mortgages gets the junk bond rating. Well, what happens is this is not plain vanilla. I mean, it's not like buying shares of equity in IBM, just, you know, which would just be a very simple investment. These are a little more complicated, so that when the investors in Europe are buying them, and even when U.S. companies were buying them, some of them simply were not, didn't understand what they were doing. An executive from Citibank, who left in 2007, said that when he was asked why they had made these investments into these structured securities that went so badly wrong, and they lost so much money on it, he admitted that he didn't really understand what it was they were investing in. And I would say to him, what are you doing at the head of a multinational financial institution if you don't understand structured securities? Unfortunately, Dr. Sen, this is the case. We have people in these executive positions at some of these institutions who do not have the in-depth knowledge to understand what these investments are and therefore what the risks are.
And this really is almost unbelievable that these people could be that foolish or that naive that they would invest, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in investment vehicles they didn't understand. That just is not rational. Do you think that they really are that stupid, or do you think that they're just playing stupid because, after all, they ought to be put in prison for, you know, destroying the investments of their bondholders and their stockholders? And, you know, it's one thing to say, oh shucks, we didn't know what we were doing. It's another thing to say we did this intentionally so we'd get our big bonuses, you know, and our 10 or 20 or $50 million bonuses, and we really didn't care because we had no responsibility. We're never held responsible for the mistakes we make. And maybe they aren't mistakes at all.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, I think that there's certainly a large element of greed. This, in fact, is at the core of in economics. When we study economics, we study the corporation.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our stations on point. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Suzanne was saying that certainly some of the people who were head of multinational organizations said, "Oh shucks, I never understood all of these multi-million-dollar investment vehicles we were investing in." And, of course, Suzanne thinks that maybe this is true. And I say these people are very, very smart, and they know what they're doing. But if they were to admit that they were intentionally investing in things simply for their own financial benefit and for the commissions involved, why, they would be sent to prison, and they should be sent to prison, because these are the people responsible for the destruction of our system. Not only that, but the derivatives actually were calculated by mathematicians, and they brought them in from MIT, and they would calculate how much you had to charge for this insurance policy using complicated calculus figures, you know, and they would calculate on a calculus basis what the derivative should cost. In other words, what the risk was. And nobody but a mathematician could understand the calculus. But it really didn't matter because there wasn't any money on deposit and there weren't any reserves to back up the insurance policies that were written. And so it was one great scam, and I really wonder if this was all stupidity or maybe there was another agenda. But you pick up the story there, Suzanne.
Well, I mean, Alan Greenspan, when he was testifying before Congress on the financial crisis, said that he was surprised that the heads of these organizations would behave in ways that was detrimental to the firm itself, right? So that the head of a bank would behave in a way that was detrimental to the long-term survival of the bank. But what Alan wasn't thinking was that this is the exact nature of what we call in economics the principal agent problem. It's the difference between who controls the asset day-to-day and determines and decides how the money will be spent versus the investor who buys the shares and therefore owns the assets of the company. The conflict of interest between the managers who are in charge day-to-day, their interest, they do what's in their best interest, which is that they have, as you said, their bonuses, the big retirement, their golden handshakes. That's in conflict, direct conflict to the interest of the shareholders who are going to be living or who are going to receive dividends and hope that the company grows and the company prospers. This, in fact, is why we have corporate governance. I mean, the whole study of corporate governance it exists for that very reason. So there's greed, certainly, as a cause. I believe there's also arrogance. I'm so smart, how could this possibly, if I make this decision, how could it possibly not be a good decision? But there's just some arrogance associated with this. And I think in some cases, too, there's also some delusion where people really believe that, as you said, they bring in this scholar from MIT. He runs some computer program and says, if you price it this way, this is what's going to happen. That computer program doesn't understand that economics is about people. It's a humanity. It's a social science. It's about the way humans behave. Humans don't behave the way computers do. We don't behave, strictly speaking, according to the laws of mathematics. We behave in sometimes irrational ways, and that's never included in those computer programs. And so to make decisions solely based on that will always be an error.
But I think that the problem, Susan, as I see it, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but the problem as I see it is we of course, read all these stories about the mathematicians using calculus to determine the cost of the derivatives, and we read all these stories about how complicated everything is and how confusing everything is, but it seems to me really the real issue is really very simple. We had major banks like Goldman Sachs and Bear Stearns and AIG and Morgan Stanley, who are writing derivative contracts, writing insurance policy with no reserves behind them. And because talk, as we do, and certainly this is what we're told about the calculus and the professors from MIT and all the money they were being paid to actually figure out what a derivative should cost, but it didn't matter what it cost. If there was no money to back it up, it really didn't matter. And how much of this is an effort to confuse us? The fact that they were allowed to write insurance policies without money, and it would be like simply allowing insurance companies to write insurance policies on people's homes without any money in the bank to back it up, that would be considered insanity. And yet that's exactly what happened with the entire financial structure of our nation. Would that be accurate to appraisal?
I think that you're hitting the nail on the head there by putting it into that language, the language of reserves, because there will this whole idea of reserves in pensions and in insurance, and even with banks being able to have access to a wide selection of investment vehicles. If you think about this. This idea of like 7 years of fat and seven years of famine. Whenever you have years of plenty, you're going to have some years of famine. And the whole idea of reserves, of having these reserves structure in place, is so that you save something from the fat years to get you through the thin years, through the famine years. And without reserves, when the famine years come, you have nothing. You have nothing to support yourself. And so in that sense, yes, you're correct. This is really the core of the problem.
And, of course, our telephone number out there is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. or 464-8295. And I think it's important for people to understand that the whole financial structure, not only the United States, but the whole world is coming down because, of course, many of these bonds, these collateralized debt obligations, asset-backed securities, structured investment vehicles, and these are all fancy terms they use to confuse us common people. They were sold throughout Europe. They were sold throughout the world. They were sold throughout the United States. And, of course, they have no value. This is why over 40, and I was just looking as of yesterday, reported in the New York Times, 47 American banks have gone down this year. 47 American banks. And certainly throughout the world, you know, throughout the United States, I think in the previous 5 years, probably 5 to 7 banks had failed. 47 have failed so far this year, but the real problem is probably the vast majority of them are insolvent because they're holding these assets that have essentially little or no value. Nobody knows how much value they have because nobody knows what the value of the assets that are in these securities are and how many of the loans, and of course the loans, new loans are going to default all the time, at least according to this report that I recently got just today from this congressional investigation of the TARP program. 10% of our loans here in the United States, of our mortgage loans, are facing default. That's a frightening figure.
Yeah, it really is. It's very frightening. And I think that this, there will always be some part of, you know, there's always some defaults in lending. That's why interest is charged because it compensates for the share of them that don't that won't be able to pay off. But the idea that they have simply multiplied multiplied all of this risk. It builds on itself and it builds on itself and it builds on itself, and it's like it's all works out and it's all okay as long as the price of houses kept going up. It was fine. But of course, you know, 7 years fat and 7 years thin, they can't go up forever. Eventually, they're going to come down. Eventually, they're going to at least stop growing as fast as they were and even come down some. On average, in the United States, home prices have gone up since World War II, 7% every year, and the average mortgage interest rate was 9%. That means that there is, on average, 2% favorable to the bank, right? So that if people default, they have some way to cover that. Well, you know, when we had double-digit increases to house prices and artificially low mortgage interest rates at 5%, that right there is a signal of a problem. Even if there were no subprime crisis, even if there were no big collapse in the housing market, the banks were holding 30-year fixed-rate mortgages at 5% when the average interest rate should have been 9. So all of those banks, those mortgages would be what they call underwater to the bank. Even if the homeowner kept making payments, the bank would still be in trouble. So what happens is what precipitates the sort of the collapse of this is when we pull one of the pegs out of the bottom, the whole thing comes down.
All right. Well, we had, of course, Tony, we had Ed calling from New Hartford, Connecticut, and I don't know what happened to Ed. Suddenly all those disappeared. And then we had Tony. Tony calling from Aptos. Well, apparently somebody pressed the wrong button.
Oh.
Anyway, Ed, if you'd like to call back, Tony, you'd like to call back, why, we'd love to try to answer your question. But I think it's so vitally important that people understand that the whole world monetary system is collapsing. This whole idea, of course, that the government is doing everything they can to solve the problem really isn't true. If Paulson had wanted to address the problem, he would have tried to stop. He would have simply gone out, bought up all these home mortgages, refinanced them, and of course he could have at that point, began to get the the situation stopped, and he absolutely refuses to try to help the people. Oh, they're making little token measures because they don't want the American people to know, at least in my estimation, they're really not addressing the situation. But let's go to Tony calling from Aptos. Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. I wanted to ask Susan if she knew whether a security, if it had a specific number of loans in it, or is it a one piece of security, like a piece of paper that says you own this one piece of security or stock, and how many loans would be grouped in something like that, number one. Number two, if you have that, is there a way of backtracking or reverse analyzing that security to figure out the individual loans that were, or individual components that were put into that security?
All right. Do you have any thoughts on that, Suzanne?
Yeah, sure. There's a variable number of loans that are going to go through any package. It could be hundreds or thousands, depending on how big the issuance is. Yes, it absolutely, you absolutely could take one of these structured securities, and there should be, and as I said earlier, a lot of mistakes were made, and some of the stuff was just done wrong, but you should be able to very specifically trace back exactly which loans are in that particular security. So when you buy one share or whatever you want to call it of a structured security, that piece that you have may or may not be traced to a specific loan, but the whole security itself, the entire issue, let's say if it's a $100 million securitized mortgage bond, then the whole package can be traced back. But what happens is when they do the structuring, they start to separate, as I said, you may be holding, in one particular piece of this bond, you could be holding just the interest payment, and another one you would have the principal. So at that level, you can't take it back to any one. For the whole, you can. And when you take, and this is exactly what the, Dr. Stan just mentioned, this congressional hearings on TARP. This is exactly the criticism that Congress had, was that they did not attempt to specifically analyze the underlying securities to get at what is the real value of these packages.
So basically,
it's something, it can be done, but they're foolishly not doing it.
And
you can't really disassemble a security like that like you disassemble an engine to get to the bare block. You can't really, that doesn't really work.
I think you probably could. I think it would be very complicated. I don't think most of these banks are in a position to do that. They thought they were getting a secure bond, and then they got to start taking this thing apart and analyzing it. And then what could be true today might not be true a month from now as more and more of the homes in your bond begin to default or foreclose on.
Well, the only one who can do it is the one that has the whole engine. The person who has the whole engine can take it apart. But it's like that, you know, five blind men and an elephant. If I only own a part of it, I didn't issue it. So the issuer can break it down. But if I only own the trunk, I cannot break it down, right? I have to have the whole package, right? So if you're holding just some shares in that bond, right, you can't break it. You can't break back your piece. But whoever issued that bond, yes, absolutely, that's their job. That's the actual job of persons working for these organizations, is to know exactly which loans are in that particular issue.
But, of course, now they've sold it, so they have really no obligation to you. After all, they sold it to you. You bought it. That's your problem, and they're just not doing it, Tony. That's the problem. Hey, we've got to run. We've got a full board. God bless.
Thanks
for calling. Let's go to Ed from New Hartford, New York. Hi, Ed. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, Dr. Stan, I ran across an article which was back in 1994 about derivatives, and I thought it might be interesting to you. This was something that they were trying to deal with to try to get a hold on the derivatives, and was something that they were dealing with, the GAO was trying to deal with the J.P. Morgan's Mark Brickell at that time. And it was stated that what the derivative was, a derivative is a financial instrument whose value is based on the price of stocks, bonds, bills, currencies, or even indexes of these, such as the Dow Jones Industrial Average. These derivatives are traded in turn in an endless round of speculation.
But, of course, now, what they're really not bringing out clearly, and they really, I think they try to confuse us, that these are insurance policies. They're pure and simple insurance policies written without any reserves, which is madness. Why would anybody do anything like that? Unless, of course, you wanted to bring down the whole economic system. And this is what they've done. They've made this thing so complicated. But it's really very simple. A derivative is an insurance policy. That's what it is.
Well, what I was wondering is, when these are traded, does that have a multiplier effect?
Suzanne?
Well, it's not the trading. Yes and no. The multiplier occurs when the derivative is issued. So they're issuing multiple derivatives on one asset. Remember what you were just reading there, that these are derivatives are financial instruments that are based on the value of some underlying asset. Well, you can multiply by issuing 10 times as many derivatives as you have assets. That's one way. Another way it happens is that what they call, there's a failure to deliver at settlement. So what happens when people are buying these derivatives, the sellers are taking the money but not delivering the securities on the other end. And that's called a failure to deliver. And that also, in the trading then, has an additional multiplier effect.
It gets pretty complicated, Ed. I think that they're really trying to confuse us because I don't think they want us to really know what's going on. Hey, we're going to have to let you go.
I did want to say.
Go ahead.
It said, right back at that time, it says that the it was growing, the derivative trading.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us.
Problem. If they were, Henry Paulson would have taken the $700 billion he did, bought up the mortgages, and probably for a fraction of that. Certainly, a woman named Bear, Suzanne Bear, I believe is her name, no, Sheila Bear, who's the head of the FDIC, had actually said that for $50 billion she could have stopped this whole cascade of home foreclosures, and the Treasury refused to back her. Why? Well, Henry Paulson says it's the home foreclosures has created the problem. So why doesn't he address that? Because he is funding his friends on Wall Street, because they have no intention of stopping this. Why? Well, you really have to understand there are powerful spiritual forces working behind the scenes. Henry Paulson and so many of the people who are making the decisions are tied into covert organizations like the Bilderbergers, the Club of Rome, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and all of these organizations are founded in the occult. And if you read the occult literature, they will tell you, and I was just reading something from the pamphlet called The Emergence. It's put out by Share International, which is an occult organization. And they basically said that this whole financial crisis is going to be used to facilitate the emergence of the Christ, not of Jesus Christ, but of the Christ. And until people understand that there are powerful spiritual forces behind everything going on today, nothing really makes sense. To put this into perspective, let me suggest the 4-tape set we have with Constance Cumby. And, of course, the DVD we have of Constance Cumby's talk before our conference 2 years ago. So they're both available. One is called just Constance Cumby, or perhaps The Wisdom of Constance Cumby. But if you ask for the 4-tape set on Constance Cumby, or 4-CD set, if you ask for the DVD on Constance Cumby, call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Of course, Constance has been researching this going back to about 1980. She's probably the world's leading expert on it. She certainly helped me to better understand the supernatural world which works behind the scenes. And if you doubt that there's a supernatural world, let me suggest our 4-tape set on the supernatural, or recent talk that Johanna Michelson gave at our October 26th conference. That talk is available by itself on CD, or you can get all the complete set of all the talks that were given in a package there. And we recommend this great information from Dr. Russell Blaylock, from Pat Wood, from Johanna Michelson, and the other speakers. You'll certainly want to get Johanna Michelson's book, The Beautiful Side of Evil, and either get the 4-tape set of The Supernatural or Johanna Michelson's talk to begin to grasp what we are really up against. Because if you look at things from a logical point of view, so much of what's going on today just doesn't make sense. And so if things don't make sense, there must be another explanation. And that is the explanation that you are never going to hear through the regular media. This is why you need to get our 4-tape set on Satanism and deliverance. Why you need to get our 4-tape set on the satanic crimes, and the book that goes with that on satanic crimes. And you'll find out the relationship between the Bilderberger organization and satanic organizations. You need to get my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness and the relationship between the Council on Foreign Relations and the secret occult society from which it came. And this is what everyone has missed, is that the Council on Foreign Relations is not simply, a dinner meeting or a dinner club or an organization that has a lot of think tanks. It's a front for a secret society that was created in 1891 by Cecil Rhodes, covered in Professor Quigley's great book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend Barry Shamish. And for those of you who don't know Barry, Barry is an Israeli patriot. He's an Israeli citizen, I believe. And, of course, he has written extensively about the corruption within the Israeli government. And, of course, it was his work that convinced almost half of the Torah-believing Jews in Israel that there was an assassination, that the assassination of the Premier Rabin, certainly of the Prime Minister Rabin, was actually the work of his own government. It was a bloody coup, and of course Barry has written about so many other issues, and of course he's going to be going on tonight telling us about what's really going on in Israel today. Barry, you go ahead and pick up the story.
Thank you. When you get home after a hard day on the radio, you'll find a story in your computer. I just finished it half an hour ago.
All right, well, fine. Fortunately, I don't have to work good very far to get home. I just walk across the courtyard, but you go right ahead.
Oh, good. Well, it's partly because of our work that I wrote this story. What we'll talk about is what the story is about the CFR, but let's not rush into it quite yet. Let's build. Now, as I told you previously, the following story may not be interesting to your American listenership, but it is enormously important in Israel. It's the end of settlement activity and the beginning of the opposite, desettlement activity. There was a house in Hebron. It's not a house. It was a large building, three stories. It was purchased by someone named Morris Abraham, who I've met on several occasions. He's a very nice man, I guess in his 70s now. He bought the Jews of Hebron a brand-new building about 50 yards from the Cave of the Patriarchs. Now, for some, and it was legal, by the way. It was all legal. The government, for some reason, decided that the building would be made illegal.
And now, basically, of course, this was a building in Hebron, which, of course, the government wants to get the Jews out of Hebron. Although this is traditionally part of Israel, it is where the Cave of the Patriarchs is, where Abraham and many of his offspring are buried there in a tomb. And, of course, so this American Jewish person buys a big building there so Jews can live in it. And the government wants to get the people out of that building for whatever reason. That certainly they want to force the Jews out of Gaza. They want to force them out of Judea and Samaria. They want to force them out of Hebron, which is a very important part of Jewish tradition. And so they say, well, certainly this building where all these Jews are living, 20 families are living, is no longer a legal residence for Jews, which doesn't really make sense. Why would they make such a big issue out of this one building? But pick the story up there.
Oh, Barry. It makes sense, all right. There's, again, this Council on Foreign Relations is really squeezing Israel hard now. There is no expansion of settlements, none. You can't add a sink to your house anymore. Expanding Hebron by buying a new building is forbidden, and it's not the Israeli government who forbade it. It's the Israeli government keeping quiet about whose orders they actually follow, and that's the issue. The CFR, and by the way, the Vatican is in on this, but it's too complicated to do that story. What we're talking about now is the CFR, now Condoleezza Rice, but Hillary Clinton will take over the role very, very shortly. And what it comes down to is they forbid anything being built by Jews in Judea and Samaria. Straight out. And the Israeli government is bluffing. They're bluffing about everything. When I wrote an article last time we spoke about the Israeli government can't attack Gaza. The CFR has stated that the Israeli government is forbidden to overturn the Palestinian leadership, militarily or any other way. So when a rocket injures 8 soldiers a week ago, one of them lost his leg, well, in my day, we would have taken care of it. When I was in the army, we would have put a stop to that. But the government lies, Olmert lies, Foreign Minister Livni lie. They talk about the grave situation in Gaza, but they know they cannot do a thing about it. Nothing. That's how much they obey the Council on Foreign Relations. They are helpless to do anything to prevent Israel's demise. And people don't understand that the government isn't lying because they're corrupt. The government isn't lying because they're self-hating Jews. The government is lying because they're ordered to lie. And I don't know, I really don't understand why that message is not deeply a part of the Israeli mentality that the government is controlled and has no say in anything. Now, as for getting rid of this building, it was just I have a book called Bye Bye Gaza. Anyone who's read it knows how they got rid of Gaza, and there was tremendous opposition to that. It involved chicanery. It involved co-opting the people like the Asia Council, the Council of the Settlements, who the settlers in Judea and Samaria trusted, they were working for the government. Their rabbis, the ones that got all the media publicity and suddenly became leaders, were working for the government. They did the same version in Hebron. The same Itamar Ben-Gvir brought his same gang of hooligans who scared as many as 1,000 people were in that building to meet the army. And these Jews just, their rowdiness and their...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Barry Shamish. And what we're really talking about is is what's going on in Israel. Now, there's some people here in the United States who believe that the Zionists, of course, of Israel, control the American government. But if you really analyze what's going on, it is the people in our government and the Council on Foreign Relations, which controls our government, which are forcing the Israeli government to do all sorts of things which are detrimental to the survival of Israel. Specifically, our government and Condoleezza Rice and the other clones of this cabal that runs our government demands that the Israelis pull out of Gaza, and they did. And then, of course, they demand that they pull out of Judea and Samaria, out of the settlements, and everything's being done to force them to do that. And now, of course, the story of what happened in Hebron when the military went in to evict the people in this home where they were living peacefully, getting along with their neighbors. But the Israeli government does exactly what they're told. And we're talking about Sidney Olmert, who's the acting prime minister. We're talking about Peres, who's the president. We're talking about Barak, who's the secretary of defense. And they're simply carrying out orders that come from Washington, D.C. So it's not that the Zionists control Washington, D.C. The Washington, D.C., the people there, are the ones who are actually controlling the Israeli government and doing so much to really weaken Israel's position, their ability to defend themselves. And of course, Barry's brought out in the past how the southern part of Israel is under constant rocket attack. But the rockets don't hit much of anything. Oh, occasionally they do hit, and as last week they hit 8 soldiers and wounded them seriously, but ordinarily they don't hit anything of any seriousness. So the Arab leaders look good to the Palestinians, and then the Israeli leaders look good to their people. But the truth of the matter is, the Israelis are not allowed to respond and go down there and knock out the rocket sites. The people are launching the rockets on the southern part of Israel. So none of this really makes sense unless you understand there's something else going on. Would that be a fair appraisal, Barry?
Yeah, that was a lot to appraise, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I would disagree with the Israeli people thinking their government is good for them, but the rest is the rest makes sense. Look, you don't underestimate what happened to Rhodesia. Now Zimbabwe slowly dying of a massive cholera epidemic. That was Henry Kissinger and Lord Carrington. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it was Kissinger and Carrington who got rid of Ian Smith and Rhodesia. Kissinger also did Rwanda in South Africa. What they did to that government is what is being done to Israel. Don't think countries can't disappear. They can disappear just fine. And the American government has a record of destroying, democracies, supposedly governments just like them, and putting in dictatorial governments worldwide. Israel's just one on a list in some ways.
I remember the Shah's sister, the Shah of Iran, I should say, his sister said after the American CIA had toppled the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollahs, the radical Islamic Ayatollahs, to power back in 1979, the Shah's sister's remark was, with friends like America, you do not need enemies. Go right ahead.
Well, I trust that. I met Daniel Moynihan. Actually, it was Golda Meir's funeral. I actually met Kissinger as well. Golda Meir died just as the Iranians took over from the Shah. And I went up to Moynihan, and I said to him, aren't you worried? Iran's got the third biggest American Air Force in the world after Israel. They've got several hundred F-15s and 16s, which back then were the number one most advanced jet fighters. And I said, can you really afford to hand this over to a bunch of Khomeinis and sheiks? And he was a really tall guy with a kind of very ruddy complexion. And he must have known I was right about the amount of equipment staying in Iran. He patted me on the shoulder and he says, "We know, son, we know," which, of course, in retrospect, was a completely useless answer. But he probably meant it, that Moynihan was also a member of the Council of Foreign Relations. As pleasant as he was, he did know that, I guess, it was their plan to leave massive amounts of American arms in the hands of the new Iranian regime.
And, of course, what we were doing was simply, once again, creating the best enemy money could buy. You have to have an enemy to rally the people. And, of course, when the Iranian Hezbollah, financed by Iran, and, of course, equipped and trained by their intelligence organization, which was really had been the intelligence organization of the Shah, so it had strong CIA ties, and then they began attacking American places and installations in Beirut, and they attack our embassy, and they attack our barracks over there, and killed a couple of hundred Marines. And they knew the attacks. Our government knew the attacks were coming, according to Robert Baer in his book, See No Evil. That's Robert Baer in his book, See No Evil. And we did not try to save the lives of our own men. You have to understand, ask yourself, what in heaven's name is going on?
That's a separate issue. I mean, they sabotaged this rescue attempt by Carter, totally sabotaged. It ended up with helicopters burning in the desert. And to get Carter out of power, I mean, they sent Cubans to America. Carter invited in Cubans, and Castro emptied out his prison of every mentally defective prisoner there was, sent them to America. They must have hijacked 20 planes just before the election. That election to get Carter out was just filled with sabotage to get Reagan Bush back in. And strange, of course, because Carter was also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. I've got you, right?
You're here, don't you worry.
Oh, good. But there were many, many strange things going on in the year 1980 to deal with Iran and Carter at the same time. Now, just to add to this, a little note of mine, I also met Henry Kissinger, which at the time, I didn't know what the CFR was in 1980. All I knew is he was a pretty short guy, about 5'8", and he was giving quotes about Golda Meir. But there was one thing that stood out for all these years. I never forgot it. There was a very lovely reporter from Yediot Ahronot, blonde, outstanding looking. And he offered her a private interview in his suite. And wink, wink, blink, blink. Those were the days when Kissinger could be proud of being a playboy. Well, I watched it happen in front of my eyes. Comes to Golda's funeral and he philanders. So it's just a minor memory. It's not very profound, but what the heck, life is short. Now back to Israel.
Go right ahead.
Well, look, this was a terrible, terrible period for Israel. Now getting rid of the Peace House was done through infiltration, the same stuff that was done again in Gaza.
Now, you're talking about, of course, this is the building in Hebron that was recently, where the people were forced out there by the military. And, of course, the resistance movement, the Israeli patriotic movement, was infiltrated by agent provocateurs, government people, pretending to support the settlers, and then, of course, really betraying them. And it's the old technique of using agent provocateurs, as they've infiltrated so many of the Christian ministries here in the United States and our conservative organizations. So there is no effective opposition against the government, and that's what they do in Israel too, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's what they do, all right. Now, I'm going to look at the aftermath. Olmert, this is a quote. I'm about to quote Olmert after Peace House was evacuated. Olmert's statement was that the evacuation of this building begins an, quote, unstoppable process that will uproot tens of thousands of Jews from their homes. That's a quote.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
I mean, that's a quote. I mean, look, to make a stupid quote like that, first of all, he's telling the truth. Nevertheless, this is fair warning. The gauntlet has been dropped. All right? It's on the floor. A gauntlet is a glove, by the way. It's on the floor. He says we're going to uproot tens of thousands of Jews from their homes, and he wasn't kidding. But it gets, in my opinion, it gets even spookier. He's got a welfare minister named Yitzhak Herzog. Now, if you're Israeli, you know all about the Herzog family. His father, Chaim, we have discussed him on the show, and I'm not going to bring it up right now. But he was the president of Israel, incredibly criminal. And what happened with Yitzhak is that he was, when Barack was running for prime minister, he was in charge of the campaign, and he stole funds from Americans, claiming that they were going to educate Israelis and put up new sports centers, and they all went into the back pocket of Barack. And he was indicted for this. And he, of course, took the fifth. Didn't say a thing, outlasted the cops, and now he is number two on the labor list. By the way, to get elected in Israel, every party, and they're... I keep hearing music, but that's,
well, that's
okay.
That's because we're going to a break, Barry. That's what, how we know they're going to a break is because we hear the music, and you hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Of course, Barry's talking about Barack, who's the defense minister there, not Barack.
No, no, yeah, he's got the welfare minister.
Go right ahead, Barry.
Oh, really? All right. Now, look, when you get elected...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Leading poets after the time of the Second World War. He disagreed with FDR. He felt he had created the Second World War. He talked about this openly. And FDR's betrayal of the American people and sending our boys off to fight in war that he'd construed. And Ezra Pound was put in a psychiatric hospital and kept there for many years. Certainly during the civil rights disturbances when General Edward Walker, I think was his name. Anyway, General Walker went to Old Mississippi and told the young people, do not, to get out and demonstrate, do not try to stop the troops. And, of course, they wanted to get rid of him. He was doing the right thing. He was telling people, don't fall into their trap and get out there and get yourself shot. They brought in the military. They're going to integrate Old Mississippi. Let them do it. And they arrested General Walker, and they sent him to a psychiatric hospital and tried to give him drugs, and he just refused to take them. He wouldn't eat anything or drink anything, and he would have died in the hospital, only, of course, from the general outcry across America. In America, they put people in psychiatric hospitals if they disagree with the government. You may not know about that. You may not like it, but what I've told you is true. Look up Ezra Pound. Look up the story of General Walker in Old Mississippi on the Internet. And you'll find it's true, and they're doing the same thing in Israel today, that to the youth there who oppose the policy of simply betraying Israel. Go ahead, Barry.
Well, they shouldn't have arrested Pound and let him write those dreadfully boring cantos.
Oh, well, I realize I didn't like his poetry either, but that has nothing to do with it.
Not an ounce of rhythm. I mean, they're terrible. Wasn't, by the way, General Walker, didn't Lee Harvey Oswald shoot at his house?
Right, he tried. Well, we're told that he tried to kill him. That was so we'd be convinced that Lee Harvey Oswald was pro-communist because he was trying to kill General Walker because he was an anti-communist, but it was all part of the effort to convince the American people that this was really a communist effort to kill, first of all, to kill General Walker. And then, of course, this communist tries to kill the President of the United States, or does kill the President, and then, of course, he himself is executed by a man who, and that's Jack Ruby, used the excuse, well, the reason I killed Lee Harvey Oswald is because I saw a billboard put up by the John Birch Society that said, impeach Earl Warren. And that's why I killed Lee Harvey Oswald. Anybody who believes that's got to be incredibly naive.
Well, Ruby actually asked for his trial to be moved to Washington. He said he couldn't open his mouth in Dallas, he'd be killed.
And, of course, within just a very few weeks, he suddenly developed cancer and died within just a few days. The most amazing case of cancer I ever saw.
Well, somebody, I hope, took care of his chihuahuas after he shot Oswald, they found two chihuahuas in his car. Well, this is just a little history trivia. Let's get back to Israel and this horrible period that led up to the evacuation. There was an attack in Mumbai. I don't know why they couldn't just call it Bombay. It's easier to remember.
Well, it's like they don't call Istanbul Constantinople, It used to be Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, but go ahead.
Well, in Mumbai, there was a Chabad house, and the Chabad are basically nice people, and seven people died in that house, and the father of the rabbi, Rabbi Holzberg, he asked Olmert not to evacuate the house, while the people who supported that house were in mourning. Seven religious people, three of them rabbis, were killed. Well, let's just put it this way. Omer could care less how many rabbis were killed. He just ignored the plea, and which is typical. But again, the people who would have supported, well, they would have protected that house, were in mourning. I'm just giving some background how easy it was to get them out of the house. They weren't there. They weren't protected. They didn't wear helmets. They had no gas masks in case the police used tear gas. By the way, I have a theory about this, and it's just a theory. Israelis were told to hand in their gas masks, and they weren't returned, which, you know, is a potential crime, a disaster. I'm thinking that it may actually be because the Israeli government doesn't want the people to have protection against their own police and their own tear gas.
Or maybe, of course, they don't want them to have protection when the country is gassed, chemical warfare, and maybe some more of them will die. Who knows?
Well, that's certainly my first theory.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Barry Samish, and Barry was just talking about the fact that they'd taken the gas masks away from so many of the Israeli citizens immediately after the last war. Well, I guess it was, 3 years ago almost, and then they promised to give them right back, and they've never given them back, and we don't know why. But certainly with the very real threat of bacteriological and chemical warfare being used against the Israeli people by the Syrians, who I believe have large supplies of that on their missiles, you would think that the Israeli government would do everything they could to protect their people. But then you'd expect that the American government would do everything they could to protect the American people from intercontinental ballistic missiles by having an effective ballistic missile defense system, and we have no effective ballistic missile system, and so our public is certainly as open to destruction as the Israeli people, and we have to ask why the function of government is to protect the populace, and they're not protecting the Israelis, and they're not protecting the American people, and I would ask, why? Go right ahead, Barry.
Well, you have to also wonder about these rumors that chemical weapons are very complicated and it's very hard to put on a missile. I mean, in World War One, when gas was first introduced in 1915, they used ordinary mortar shells and it killed 5,000 soldiers in an hour. It's not a complicated technology to use mustard gas. And you keep hearing this, the Syrians aren't ready. Baloney. A gas attack on Tel Aviv would work just horribly. Thousands would die. And you're right, the Israelis don't have a gas mask. Not a gas mask.
Well, of course, there's so many things, you know. They try to make everything look so complicated. Oh, we just don't know what to do here in the United States with the nuclear waste. You know, there's just no way we can have nuclear power. We don't know what to do with the nuclear waste. And that's just simply a lie, but repeated often enough, everybody believes it. What you do with your nuclear waste is what every other country does with their nuclear waste. You reprocess it and use it over again. And there's very little or almost nothing left over after you reprocess. Processed it, but they don't want the American people to know that, and they certainly don't want either the American or the Israeli people to ask that very simple question. Why isn't our government trying to protect us from being destroyed? That's the function of government, but they try to give you the idea everything's so complicated, we just can't come up with any sort of a solution. We're just so incompetent. I don't think we're incompetent at all. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Barry Samish. And Barry, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get your DVDs, how they can get your books, and how they can get your website and get the great information that you put out.
Well, the books, and we're talking with Bye Bye Gaza today, with the removal of Peace House They use the same techniques they use in Gushka Teeth. So you go to lulu.com for all my books, but especially that one, lulu.com, and you'll see a little box that says search right in my name, Chamish. That's Chamish, and you'll get to my books. When you buy the books, don't get them in color. They're very expensive. The black and white ones are not. My website is barrychamish.com. And I'm going to be in Omaha this week. If anybody listens from the Omaha area, give me a phone call and I'll tell you where I am. And that's 904-315-8079. Again, that's 904-315-8079. And now we're back again to the effects of this evacuation.
Well, one more thing. You didn't tell people how to get your DVDs.
Same phone number.
Okay, fine.
I have a brand new DVD. When I get back from Omaha, I'll send it to you. It was done in Atlanta, and it's my second lecture. Actually, my first lecture in Atlanta. It's the Vatican Update DVD, and I'll put it in the mail to you when I get back from Omaha.
All right. I'll look forward to getting it, Barry.
You'll like this one. It's a very nice one. Now, the fallout from the Peace House evacuation, it so happens that 3 days later, the Likud had their primaries. And again, Netanyahu is a stooge of the CFR. This isn't the time to tell you how, but he is. He put together a list of recommended candidates, local celebrities, a local general, of moderate to left-wing personalities, which is not supposed to be the Likud. It's supposed to be the right-wing opposition. Well, they all lost. 3 days after Peace House was evacuated, all but one, I think one made it to the 17th spot. All the rest were wiped out. And the Likud put together a party, deeply opposed to the Gush Katif pullouts, and they were opposed when it was happening. And, well, we've got ourselves a party that Netanyahu doesn't want, that Sharon defied, and one member, Moshe Feiglin, who really betrayed protests in Israel. He led something called Zohar Tseno, This Is Our Country, and then he abandoned it to join the Likud. Nonetheless, he made number 20 on the list, and they'll have to deal with him. And watch out, I'll bet he drops. The point of the matter is, after the evacuation, you got yourself a right-wing party again in Israel, which, by the way, is the way it's supposed to be. Sharon destroyed it, but once again, thanks to this evacuation, you got it back again. The people reacted to the missiles, the evacuation, the murders in Mumbai, and Likud is now a right-wing party that will probably be elected to the next Knesset. But don't worry, it won't change anything because Netanyahu is still head of the Likud, and he'll do what Sharon did, which is just betray his party and his people. You don't have to worry about that. It's guaranteed. Now, what I did, and you're going to get it next time you turn on the computer. This was an immensely important week for the CFR. Immensely important. Number one, there was a paper prepared for Barack Obama. It's called Restoring the Balance, Middle East Strategy for the Next President. It was composed by Martin Indyk. Well, what it was composed for is Hillary Clinton's people. Somebody must have just put a knife under Barack Obama's throat and said, you may be the president, but Clinton is going to be the real president. Because the Clinton gang is now in charge, well, they're certainly in charge of Israel. Who knows if they're in charge of the United States? That's your business. But Martin Indyk was a Clinton boy. He's a real, real Australian desert rat. And he put together this CFR recommendation to Barack, which, by the way, is exactly the same as the Oslo Accord or the Saudi proposal or the roadmap or the quartet proposal or the roadmap proposal. They're all the same. There's nothing as Israel chops itself up so it's indefensible and terror states surround it and Israel goes the way of South Africa, Rhodesia, and so forth. Nothing has changed. But Martin Indyk wrote this breathtakingly stupid paper with Gary Samore, S-A-M-O-R-E, Director of Studies for the CFR, and it was all done at the Saban Institute of the Brookings Institution this week. This week they released it to a lot of press, but do you think that was something? Tony Blair, I guess 3-4 days ago, that's all. He spoke to the CFR, and he asked the CFR to press Israel for territorial concessions. I mean, that's it. The genie's out of the bottle. He outright said to the CFR, press Israel for territorial concessions. Unless you think this is just a group that meets for dinner every now and then and talk theory, that is not the case. When Blair asks for territorial concessions, he knows the CFR can give them territorial concessions. And in this speech, he praised the Obama team. Hillary Clinton, the new Secretary of State, her husband is CFR. She is Mrs. CFR. And James Jones, the National Security Advisor. Now, what's interesting, in my opinion, and you'll find out when you open the piece, an Israeli organization, something I'd never heard of before, the Zionist Freedom Alliance, had their spokesman, his name is Yehuda HaKohen, and here's the quote saying, so long as the CFR interferes in the Middle East, there will never be peace between Arabs and Jews.
I think I certainly tend to agree with that. Who's behind that Freedom Alliance?
You got me.
All right, fine. Well, I just hope they're a legitimate organization and not an organization set up by the CFR, the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Commission, to lead the opposition, because they are so expert at that.
Well, again, I've been waiting for this for a long time. I mean, my ambitions are very humble. To have an organization that finally uses the word Council on Foreign Relations and says that they're stirring the pot in the Middle East is something I've never seen before. And what can I tell you? I'm easily satisfied.
All right, Vine. Well, let's hope that your enthusiasm is well justified.
I wouldn't say enthusiasm. I would just say that it doesn't take much to please me these days.
All right, fine. Well, I've been around this for, I've been at this for 46 years, and I've been trapped so many times by people who say everything I believe, and then I find out that they're there simply to mislead us off on another rabbit trail. But anyway, I'm glad to hear that at least they're talking about it, because it's always education. Maybe they're good, maybe they're bad, but any education is better than no education at all, so go ahead.
Well, the CFR appointed people this week. As I said, Hillary Clinton won the election.
Right.
Barack Obama may be the president for the next 4 years, but he is not running the show. Amongst the appointees, poor Israel, it got back, well, first of all, Samantha Powers, who believes that the United States should declare war on Israel and bring peace militarily. She is now an advisor in the Obama, I believe, cabinet. I think she's a cabinet advisor. Her name is Samantha Powers of the CFR. Dangerous, dangerous cow. Got appointed this week. And then there's Dan Kurtzer. Extremely dangerous. He was the ambassador to Tel Aviv. Again, during Clinton. He was Clinton's ambassador to Tel Aviv. Now, he pretends or doesn't pretend. He wears a kippah on his head and claims he's Orthodox. Now one thing people always attack this kind of a person as being a traitor for what he's doing to Israel. And it's horrible stuff, by the way. An Orthodox guy wanting to abandon the cave of the patriarchs, Rachel's tomb, Joseph's tomb, and the heart of their beliefs. It doesn't make sense. And people are wrong. They're not traitors. They did something in the past. Like Sandy Berger is a thief, and they caught him stealing documents and so forth. Also CFR. These people do things, and they get caught, and they get blackmailed. And this is what is not properly understood, in which over time I've seen it. You commit a crime, and then you become extremely malleable to any suggestion given to you. Whatever, Dan Kircher did something in his past. We don't know what it was, but it must have been humiliating. And that's how they brought him to their side. Well, lo and behold, Barack Obama has appointed him his special envoy to the Middle East. Lord, that's a Clinton boy again advising Obama. You know, I can only imagine the threats he must have taken from the Clinton camp. It must have been overwhelming for him to make these cabinet decisions. If I believe he's allowed to make low-level cabinet decisions, but on the fate of the world and certainly of Israel, he does not have any say whatsoever.
Okay, fine. Well, I think that certainly as you look at the cabinet and the appointees of Barack Obama, the Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, certainly they belong to the Bilderbergers. There are people, so many of the people there have attended the last Bilderberger meeting, as Timothy Gartner, the new Undersecretary of the State, was there, along with Larry Summers, who's on the head of the Council of Economic Advisors for the President. And I think Paul Volcker, who is a special advisor to the to President
Barack. It's awful. They're all Jews.
Right.
Summers, Volcker, and these are Jews.
Is Volcker Jewish? I didn't know he was.
Oh, yes, he is. Paul Volcker?
Right.
You betcha he is. What head of the Federal Reserve hasn't been in 20 years?
Well, how about William McChesney Martin?
When was that? It was over 20 years
ago. All right, fine. Go ahead.
Okay, and he may have been the last Protestant. This is the whole Sabbatean issue, and this is not the time to dive into it. But
how about Bernanke?
He's Jewish, of course.
Is he really? I didn't know that.
Oh yes.
I have to go to you to learn all these things, Barry. Go ahead.
Oh, and this is one of the great shames that the Federal Reserve has been headed by a Jew, one after another after another. It's a horrible shame. And again, the Jewish people look at these people with pride. And I keep telling you, you don't look at a Greenspan or a Volcker. You don't look at any, the head of the World Bank, Paul Wolfowitz, is sleeping with his Iranian girlfriend and giving her money from it doesn't matter. You don't look at these slime balls with pride. But you have the head of the IMF, James Wolfensohn, the head of the Bank of Israel, Yaakov Frankel, worked for Wolfowitz at the IMF.
Well, of course, the thing is that they are evil people. It has nothing to do with their racial extraction. It has to do with the fact that they are a part of this, what I refer to as the World Satanic Movement. You refer to them as Sabbatean. It doesn't matter. They certainly have no loyalty either to America or, of course, to Israel.
They have none to Israel. None whatsoever to Israel. They are destroying the Jewish people thoroughly. And this, again, you have to get my books to understand that the Jewish people have been infiltrated. Now, I'm going to go to an issue that should be looked at in a wider sense, and that is Foreign Minister Livni. Oh, she is one Pat Apple herself. But nonetheless, with all of this happening to Israel, with rockets landing, 239 rockets landed in 7 days. Rockets and mortars. 239 of them. Can you imagine 239? Israel's got 6 million people. The equivalent in the States would be something like Houston. Can you imagine 239 missiles and mortars landing on Houston? That's what Israel put up with this week. Now, how did the Israeli government react? Well, of course, they agreed to pardon these, well, almost the exact same number of Palestinians, 230, 80 of them with murder charges on them.
Well, you see, Barry, this doesn't make any sense, but somebody's got to point this out. That's why you serve such a very useful purpose. You bring these things out, and you can bring them out much more effectively than I can. And logical people would have to say, why, if you were being attacked by the Arab, by the Palestinians, would you release Palestinians, many of them guilty of murder? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So there has to be another explanation.
Well, again, I'm glad that you didn't know that Ben Bernanke wasn't a Jew.
I really didn't know that. I don't even think of this, really, because I look at the person, not at the racial origin.
Well, the Jews are being set up.
No, of course.
Kidding? As the world heads into depression, and you have these Jewish names on top of the World Bank and the IMF and the Federal Reserve, it's not going to do the Jews any good.
You're absolutely right. Well, Chris, they put so much evidence, so much false evidence out there, and this is what promotes anti-Semitism. And what we have to do is try to get people to understand that this is not a racial movement. It's a spiritual movement, and there really are some wicked and evil people in the Protestant Church, in the Catholic Church, in the Jewish faith. And until we do, why, nothing's going to change. And we're never going to convince these people who believe that the Zionists control Washington, D.C. But if they're controlling Washington, D.C., then why are they trying to destroy Israel? And they really are. We're going to be back in just a moment. Our guest has been Barry Shamis. Always a fascinating discussion. We never know where we're going. Well, Barry,
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Every week to keep you abreast of what's happening, as we have other people on who I think are very, very articulate, and I think we've got a great rundown of speakers. At least I hope you enjoy the Radio Liberty programs. I hope you are getting other people to listen, and I will tell you, we have a growing audience across America, and it's so gratifying to me that we're able to reach people and educate them. Now, if you really want information, let me suggest you go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can watch our DVDs or see our link to YouTube programs, or you can certainly read our newsletters. You can listen to our radio programs. You can read our essays. And we don't put up something every day there, but we do have excellent letters. And I struggle over them. We just finished our November newsletter. It'll be going out in a day or so. It'll be posted up on the website to explain to you what's really happening as far as the financial collapse and the shocking realization that we're not trying to stop it. But they can't tell the American people that, because they don't want the American people to understand that the loyalty of our leaders is not to America, but to the New World Order, the New World Financial System, the New World Currency, the New World Religion. That's why you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and or watch the DVD on the Internet, or you can purchase the DVD along with the book and the tape, the Brotherhood of Darkness special. It's well worthwhile having the information. You're going to have to read it through several times, because it will tend to, well, challenge everything you think you know, and most of what you know just isn't true. Then you need to hear our talk on the forbidden secret, because it is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years. Manifest today in our society and being popularized by Oprah Winfrey and Rhonda Burns and Shirley MacLaine, and you need to get the information to understand what's going on today and to protect yourself and your family. That's the forbidden secret. There's a syllabus that goes with that. We recommend that. The planned police state talk and syllabus will take you into the background and the writings of some of the people on the other side. And I'm not talking about the communists or the socialists. They've been financed since their inception by people right here in the United States. If you haven't read my pamphlet on the communist capitalist conspiracy, if you haven't seen my interview with Professor Sutton on the best enemies money could buy, and of course you need to get the book Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. And then, of course, if you read those, and there's a book, of course, called The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, written by Professor Sutton, and you suddenly come to the realization that we have financed communism since its inception. The book Foundations, Their Power and Influence is very important. It was written by the Council for the Rees Committee, the only congressional committee ever allowed to investigate the tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Ford, and Carnegie. And what did they find? Why, they were funding communism. And socialism, and Marxism, and internationalism, and their loyalty was not to America, but to another source. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack from within today. And once you begin to understand that, so much of what's going on really does begin to make sense. So we hope you'll certainly get our material, and hopefully you'll join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and then you'll get other people to help us get the information out and learn about our Constitution and learn about the traitors we have in Washington, D.C., who have a different allegiance. Their loyalty is not to the United States, but to this internationalist dream. And behind that, of course, are the powerful spiritual forces. If you haven't yet seen Constance Cumby's DVD, it's on, is this Constance Cumby, or the four-tape set of my interviews with Constance Cumby, you need to get that. Chris Pinto's DVD, The Atlantis Connection. And then please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection until tomorrow at the same time. May the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.